The Beast of Nazi Death Barracks. Aleister Crowley once told the British painter Gerald Kelly, "In a thousand years from this moment, the world will be sitting in the sunset of Crowleyanity." The painter's sister Rose Edith Kelly married Aleister Crowley in 1903. She aided him in the Cairo working that led to the receiving of the Book of the Law on which Crowley based his Thelema philosophy and creed. Yet, beneath the veneer of the mystic and occult philosopher was a depleted charlatan, a heroin addict, a sadistic pervert, and a preposterous scoundrel. Crowleyanity was the name of his distorted belief system that would replace Judeo-Christianity. Director Donna Zucker brought, In Search of the Great Beast 666, Aleister Crowley, 2007. Aleister Crowley attended Trinity College at Cambridge University, but was ready to walk out before completing his degree when it became well known that he suffered from acute necrophilia. He boasted of various appalling debaucheries, including sex magic acts that involved feeding blood to a carcass of human remains he kept in his home. The presiding genius of this place was a human skeleton, which I fed from time to time with blood, small birds, and the like. The idea was to give it life, but I never got further than causing the bones to become covered with a viscous slime. Aleister Crowley. He claimed to have been contacted by a supernatural entity. In reality, Crowleyanity was the embodiment of foul necrophilia as a decadent magician with his head shaved in the custom of ancient executioners. In the 1980s, some Holocaust survivors thought that John Demjanjuk, who died in 2012, was the monstrous guard Ivan Marchenko at the Treblinka extermination camp. Ivan Grozny, or Ivan the Terrible, was apparently a shaved executioner who operated gas chambers at Treblinka, the Nazi death camp in occupied Poland in World War II. Nicknamed after Russia's first Tsar Ivan IV, who lived a brutal life, Ivan the Terrible of Treblinka was said to be a sadistic doer of malicious and cold-blooded deeds who killed thousands at Treblinka in 1942 and 1943. Treblinka survivors testified that Ivan the Terrible had also savaged Jews, breaking arms and legs with a steel pipe, cutting off ears and noses with a sword, and flogging women and children with sadistic glee. Robert D. McFadden, John Demjanjuk, 91, dogged by charges of atrocities as Nazi camp guard, dies, International New York Times, March 17, 2012. John Demjanjuk was born in the Ukraine, a state that was absorbed by the Soviet Union in World War II. He moved to the United States in 1952, and became an American citizen. He settled in Cleveland where he became a mechanic at a Ford plant and anglicized his name from Ivan to John. In 1975, Michael Hanasiak, editor of the Ukrainian News, presented a list of ethnic Ukrainians living in the United States suspected of collaborating with Germans in World War II to what was then the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. Demjanjuk's name was on that list. Soviet newspapers and archives had provided the names during Hanasiak's visit to the Soviet Union in 1974. Hanasiak also handed over a purported copy of a Nazi ID card issued to Demjanjuk at Tronicki. Wikipedia.org. In 1977, the Justice Department sued to revoke Demjanjuk's citizenship, saying he had lied on his immigration request. Soon after that, 11 Holocaust survivors, including Eliyahu Rosenberg, identified Demjanjuk as Ivan the Terrible, the Ukrainian captured and trained by the Germans to operate gas chambers. Demjanjuk's defense was that the survivors were relying on memories 4 decades old. It also challenged the identity card, saying the photo showed signs of having been lifted from another document, cited an incorrect height for Mr. Demjanjuk, and said its bearer had been at encampments in Poland at Chelmno in 1942 and Sobibor in 1943 but didn't mention Treblinka. Demjanjuk testified that he had been held as a prisoner at Chelmno for 18 months until 1944, and then in Austria until the war's end. He claimed he was a Ukrainian prisoner of war in Germany and Poland who made his way to America and became a victim of mistaken identity, or identity theft. Demjanjuk insisted that Germany was using him as a scapegoat. but he was stripped of his U.S. citizenship for lying about his past and extradited to Israel for trial in 1986. Under Israeli law, any defendant sentenced to death is automatically granted an appeal against the sentence, and in Demjanjuk's case this proved crucial, since during that process, the prosecution found testimonies of numerous Treblinka guards which cast serious doubt on his identification as Ivan the Terrible. Ephraim Zurov, The Demjanjuk Trial in Retrospect, The Jerusalem Post, February 24, 2014. Eliyahu Rosenberg was a witness who said that the Ukrainian-born Cleveland, Ohio mechanic John Demjanjuk was one and the same as Ivan the Terrible, the notorious guard at the Treblinka death camp. But it became known that Rosenberg had previously testified that Ivan had been killed during a prisoner uprising. An attorney for John Demjanjuk, Israeli lawyer Yoram Sheftel, argued in 1988 that the Nazi identity card linked to his client was a clever forgery by the Soviet KGB. Sheftel has argued that the KGB forged the ID card as part of an elaborate Soviet plot to frame Demjanjuk, who is accused of being the gas chamber guard Ivan the Terrible at the Treblinka death camp in German-occupied Poland. Demjanjuk contends that he was never at Treblinka. Holocaust survivors have testified that Ivan was the guard who beat Jews and other prisoners as he shoved them into the gas chambers of Treblinka, where about 850,000 people were killed in 1942 and 1943. The identity card, referred to as Document T-149, is the key piece of evidence, and has already been disputed. The prosecution says it was issued to Demjanjuk at a German center where he was trained to be a concentration camp guard before he was sent to work at Treblinka. The Israelis say the card was captured by the Soviet Union from the Nazis at the end of the war and was supplied to Israel for the Demjanjuk trial by Armand Hammer, a U.S. businessman with close ties to the Soviet leadership. Demjanjuk lawyer cites criticism of Israeli agents in final arguments, The Philadelphia Inquirer, February 16, 1988. The ID card had not been forensically tested for age and authenticity. According to Mark O'Connor, Valery G. Kubanov, the first secretary and consul at the Soviet embassy in Washington, acknowledged that the ID card could have been doctored by Moscow. Milad Ukraini, Ukrainian Youth, contained an April 30, 1986 article that continued to place Demjanjuk at Sobibor rather than Treblinka, and, more importantly, it displayed a different version of the identification card. The photo on the card is of a different man, and it appears on the opposite side of the card. Yet the two cards were supposed to be one and the same. In 2011, the Kiev Post said two Ivan Demjanjuks were in the Soviet Red Army in World War II. Reportedly, one Demjanjuk committed suicide in 1971. Among other things, Armand Hammer became sneered at for delivering out of the Soviet Union, the KGB-made Tronicki ID card used in the John Demjanjuk case. As said by the 1998 book, Dossier, The Secret History of Armand Hammer, by Edward J. Epstein, Armand Hammer became known in American business circles as the Soviet Union's first capitalist. Moving from Tsarist Russia to New York in 1892, his father Julius grew up as a radical socialist and named his first son Armand after the arm and hammer symbol of the American Socialist Labor Party. Attending a socialist gathering in Stuttgart in 1907, Julius met the man who would later play a key role in Armand's business career, Vladimir Ilyich Lenin. 4 years after the Russian Revolution, Armand Hammer paid his first visit to Moscow at just the moment that Lenin was seeking Western business investment in the struggling communist economy. The new communist regime was also looking for means of channeling funds to its undercover networks in America. Armed with evidence exhumed from the Kremlin's newly accessible archives, Epstein claims that Hammer effectively sold his soul to communism. In return for the first mining concession to be awarded an American businessman in Russia, Hammer allowed his family company, then called Allied Drug, to be exploited for espionage purposes. He had crossed a line into a land of intrigue, from which there was no return, Epstein writes. The deal with Lenin secured Hammer a unique place in Cold War history. Although he was a prominent public figure who industriously courted the media, he would always be viewed with suspicion by Western intelligence agencies. Indeed, even before he reached Moscow on his first trip in 1921, he was detained and questioned by MI5 on board the SS Aquitania. But he always stuck to his story that he was no more than a business ambassador whose contacts were useful to both sides. Tony Allen Mills, The Great Pretender, The Sunday Times, March 15, 1998. Hammer secretly recorded tapes, sometimes using a cufflink for a microphone that assisted him immeasurably. Edward J. Epstein exposed the startling network of bribery and corruption that secured Occidental multi-billion dollar oil concessions in Libya and Venezuela. Gorky Park is a 1983 mystery film starring William Hurt and Lee Marvin, from the novel by Martin Cruz Smith, screenplay by Dennis Potter, directed by Michael Apted. An investigator on the Moscow police force pursues the solution to a triple homicide that occurred in Moscow's Gorky Park. He finds that no one really wants to solve the crime because it is the tip of an intricate conspiracy that involves the top levels of the Moscow government. An American businessman in Russia is unwilling to pay a high enough smuggler's price. Based on the ID card provided by Armand Hammer, John Demjanjuk was convicted in 1988 as Ivan the Terrible, who ran the gas chambers in the Treblinka death camp. God help us. We are the Salem judges of our own time, said political commentator Pat Buchanan, arguing that Demjanjuk's 1988 conviction in Israel was the result of a witch hunt. New York Post, March 17, 1990. Found guilty and sentenced to death in 1988, he was held until 1993, when the Israeli Supreme Court struck down his conviction, citing new evidence from former guards at Treblinka that Ivan the Terrible was another Ukrainian, Ivan Marchenko. On his citizenship application, Mr. Demjanjuk had listed his mother's maiden name as Marchenko, but contended later that he had forgotten her real maiden name and used Marchenko only because it was common in Ukraine. Released by Israel, Mr. Demjanjuk returned to Cleveland, where a federal appeals court overturned his 1981 conviction for lying on his immigration papers, saying prosecutors had deliberately withheld evidence and committed fraud. His citizenship was restored in 1998. But in 1999, the government again sued to strip him of citizenship, charging that he had been a Nazi guard at Majdanek and Sobibor in Poland and at Flossenbürg in Bavaria. After a trial, a court in 2002 upheld the government. An appeal confirmed the decision in 2004. In 2005, he was ordered deported to Germany, Poland, or Ukraine, and the United States Supreme Court denied him a hearing in 2008. In 2009, Germany agreed to accept Mr. Demjanjuk as a deportee to stand trial on charges that he helped kill Jews at Sobibor. His lawyers and family argued that he was too sick, but doctors concluded that he was fit enough. The case involved 15 transport trains known to have arrived at Sobibor in 1943 from the Westerbork camp in the Netherlands, carrying 29,579 people. Mr. Demjanjuk was charged with 27,900 counts based on a theory that some must have died in transit. When a transport of Jews arrived, routine work was suspended and all camp personnel took part in the routine process of extermination, the indictment said. The unloading of the trains proceeded with loud cries, blows and also shots. If people refused to come out, the Tronicus entered the cars and forced those who hesitated, with violence, out of the train and onto the ramp. Robert D. McFadden, John Demjanjuk, 91, dogged by charges of atrocities as Nazi camp guard, dies, New York Times, March 17, 2012. This was the first time someone had been convicted solely on the basis of serving as a camp guard, with no evidence of being involved in the death of any specific inmate. It started in the United States, to which Demjanjuk emigrated from Germany after World War II, continued in Israel, to which he was extradited as Ivan the Terrible, who ran the gas chambers in the Treblinka death camp, returned to the States after his expulsion from Israel following the discovery of testimony which raised reasonable doubt about his identity, and finally concluded successfully in Germany, where his identity as an armed SS watchman, guard, at the Sobibor death camp was confirmed by a German court. Ephraim Zuroff, the chief Nazi hunter of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and the director of its Israel office, wrote, "The prosecutor's case basically claimed that any armed SS personnel in a pure death camp like Sobibor, whose sole purpose was the mass murder of Jews, was automatically guilty of at least accessory to murder, even if no evidence was presented to the court of a specific crime committed by the defendant. That argument was accepted by the court in Munich, which convicted Demjanjuk in spring 2011 and paved the way for a comprehensive search by the German authorities for all those still alive who served in death camps and in the Einsatzgruppen, special mobile killing squads, whose primary purpose was also mass murder." Ephraim Zuroff, The Demjanjuk Trial in Retrospect, The Jerusalem Post, February 24, 2014. Despite decades of legal wrangling and dispute, Demjanjuk died waiting to plea. The likelihood of mistaken identity concerned the Bavarian prosecutors. On May 3, 2012, Dr. Ulrich Busch, one of Demjanjuk's lawyers, said that documents and statements from Tronicki on Demjanjuk differed so widely that there must have been about six different Demjanjuks. Simon Wiesenthal, an iconic personage in Nazi hunting, first believed John Demjanjuk was guilty, but after Demjanjuk's acquittal by the Israeli Supreme Court, said he too would have cleared him given the new evidence. In 1977, Armand Hammer, the chairman of the Occidental Petroleum Corporation, began a curious friendship with the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, as part of a calculated and ultimately unsuccessful effort to impress the Swedish Academy to award Hammer the Nobel Peace Prize. No facts were presented to confirm that John Demjanjuk was in the Treblinka extermination camp. Who was Ivan the Terrible of Treblinka? He was a wanderer of the Wastrels, the brute of grave necrophilia. Victorian Quakers judged the artificial insemination that brought him into the world as a sinful crime. The name of his paternal donor was kept a top secret. He grew up to take pleasure in harm and disruption. He accepted he was created greater than man, not of sexual procreation but in a test tube at a eugenics laboratory. He became a thief of identity. He shaved his head, slipped on a dungeon belt, and fired up the executioner's ovens. Across the channel, lords and ladies watched Europe's darkest days in utter dismay. Yet none could prevent him. He was a negligent double, the Beast of Berlin. But the bloody sacrifice, though more dangerous, is more efficacious, and for nearly all purposes human sacrifice is the best. In the sacrifice during invocation, however, it may be said without fear of contradiction that the death of the victim should coincide with the supreme invocation. Aleister Crowley. A biographical history of Aleister Crowley's activities in Berlin from 1930 to 1932 as Hitler was rising to power was offered in the 2014 book, Aleister Crowley, The Beast in Berlin, Art, Sex, and Magic in the Weimar Republic, by Tobias Chitten. Bringing up previously unpublished letters and diary material by Crowley, Chitten examined Crowley's years in Berlin, including his contacts with German Theosophy, Freemasonry, and his work as a spy for British intelligence. Crowley became a boss of the German OTO Magical Order after 1925. Chitten recounted the fates of Crowley's colleagues under the Nazis and the lodges banned by the National Socialists in the late 1930s. As a result of John Demjanjuk's trial, investigations were launched into the crimes of 50 former guards of the Auschwitz-Birkenau extermination camp under suspicion of murder, the German news website Der Westen reported. The case was under investigation by Germany's Central Office of the State Justice Administrations for the Investigation of National Socialist Crimes, which is officially known as Zentralstelle, and is reportedly based in the city of Ludwigsburg. In February 2015, German prosecutors charged a 94-year-old man with 3,681 counts of accessory to murder on allegations he served in the Nazis' Auschwitz death camp. New York Daily News said the suspect was an SS sergeant who served as a medic in Auschwitz in an SS hospital. The suspect allegedly helped the extermination camp function. The U.S. deported 95-year-old ex-Nazi concentration camp guard Jakub Palach to Germany in 2018. Demjanjuk's verdict allowed Germany's judicial system to cover new legal territory because his presence as a guard at a site of a mass murder was enough to implicate him in the murders that were carried out there. John Demjanjuk died on March 17, 2012 in Germany at the age of 91, while waiting to appeal his conviction. Holocaust, 1978 miniseries, is the saga of the Nazi massacre. Hans plays with Lottie, Lottie plays with Jane. Jane plays with Willie, Willie is happy again. Suki plays with Leo, Sasha plays with Brit. Adolf builds a bonfire, Enrico plays with it. Whistling tunes we hid in the dunes by the seaside. Whistling tunes we're kissing baboons in the jungle. It's a knockout. If looks could kill, they probably will. In Games Without Frontiers, War Without Tears. Games Without Frontiers, War Without Tears. Peter Gabriel, Games Without Frontiers, 1980. In the 2014 Smithsonian Channel TV series One is Treblinka, Hitler's killing machine Caroline Sturdy calls, a forensic archaeologist from Staffordshire University in the UK, uncovered new scientific evidence on the existence and mechanism of the Treblinka death camp. They did a very good job of hiding it, but in actual fact, they didn't sterilize this landscape, Sturdy Calls said. They weren't that efficient. The complex, 65 miles northeast of Warsaw, consisted of Treblinka I, primarily a forced labor camp, and Treblinka II, the site of the killing machine, closed in 1943 after 24 months of operation. During that time span, its 10 gas chambers asphyxiated 900,000 men, women, and children. The grisly work done, the Nazis went to extraordinary lengths to erase every trace of the camp's existence. SS Chief Heinrich Himmler's men destroyed all structures, filled in and leveled the earth above, and even installed a Ukrainian farmer in a newly built farmhouse. Viewed from the ground and from the air, Treblinka appeared as peaceful farmland and forest, without barracks or gas chambers and marked later only by a stone monument. Tom Tigent, archaeologist at Treblinka Nazi death camp, finds evidence of gas chambers, the Jerusalem Post, March 30, 2014. Eyewitness accounts from survivors and captured guards brought the true story to light. One camp at Treblinka was primarily a forced labor facility. Another camp was designed specifically for herding thousands of victims at a time into one side of a bathhouse, where they were gassed to death with carbon monoxide exhaust from tank engines. The bodies were taken out the other side for mass burial, and later cremation. Alan Boyle, archaeologists delicately dig up Nazi death camp secrets at Treblinka, NBC News, March 29, 2014. The New York Daily News said the camp could process 6,000 people in an hour, from arrival on a train to burial in a mass grave. The Nazis leveled the Treblinka camp and buried it once they had killed some 1.6 million Jews and other undesirables there. Over the course of 6 years, the archaeologists developed computerized maps of the area using aerial photography, GPS technology, ground-penetrating radar, and a laser scanning technology known as LIDAR. Those maps helped them zero in on a handful of sites. Alan Boyle, archaeologists delicately dig up Nazi death camp secrets at Treblinka, NBC News, March 29, 2014. Given the absence of visual evidence, Holocaust deniers around the world focused on Treblinka to claim that it was really a transit camp rather than a killing ground. 6 years ago, Kahls arrived determined to dig underneath the placid surface. Inch by inch, the team carefully dug two trenches, which yielded no evidence. Finally, in a third trench, Kahls found human bones, but, more importantly, broken tiles imprinted, incongruously, with the Star of David. What was the significance of this strange discovery? Two of the few living Treblinka survivors testified that the Nazis disguised the front of gas chambers to resemble a mikveh, or ritual bathhouse, complete with tiles bearing the Star of David. Tom Tegent, archaeologist at Treblinka Nazi death camp, finds evidence of gas chambers, the Jerusalem Post, March 30, 2014. The six-pointed solid star tiles of Treblinka were eventually traced to the Jaworzno I Lang porcelain factory in Poland. The porcelain factory still exists. In September 2014, historian David Silberklang announced that researchers from Israel's Yad Vashem and Poland's Majdanek State Museum found the exact site of the building that housed the gas chambers at Sobibor, which had killed an estimated 250,000 Jewish inmates between April 1942 and October 1943. Team archaeologists Yoram Haimai and Wojciech Mazurek said the camp was dismantled after a revolt and a road was built over it. In addition, 93-year-old Oscar Groening was charged in 2014 with 300,000 counts of accessory to murder for his role as a guard in Auschwitz. He was in charge of inmates' possessions and money where 300,000 were gassed between May and June 1944. Holocaust deniers alleged the Nazi concentration camps were actually even-handed work camps, with some scattered killings. But in 2006, Germany, Israel and the U.S. signed an accord to give historians admission to a library of millions of Nazi files that make known how the Holocaust happened. The Associated Press reported, about 17.5 million victims of Nazi persecution have been catalogued in the archive. Over the decades, the tracing service has responded to nearly 12 million requests for information from the survivors or relatives, and requests are still pouring in. 61,000 of them in 2007. Richard Spencer, leader of the alt-right, talked about Donald Trump's Holocaust Day Remembrance Digidification statement. But documents confirming the Holocaust were kept by the Nazis themselves and make void arguments of Holocaust deniers. Several years ago, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum located in Washington, D.C. estimated that just before the Second World War, the overall Jewish population of Europe was about 9.5 million. In 2006, Germany, Israel and the U.S. signed an agreement, which was to give historians access to an archive of millions of Nazi files shedding light on how the Holocaust happened. The archive touches on the fates of 17.5 million victims of the Nazis and has until now been open only to them and their relatives, a limitation which has led academics to accuse Germany of trying to obscure the past. Collecting and analyzing fragmented reports, researchers at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum say they have pinpointed some 20,000 places of detention and persecution, three times more than they estimated just 6 years ago. Arthur Max, Nazi Archive Sheds Light on Death Camps, Associated Press, 2006. The International Tracing Service, ITS, in Bad Erlsen, Germany, serves victims of Nazi persecutions and their families by documenting their fate through the archives it manages. The ITS archive holds 26,000 meters of various types of records. The alphabetically and phonetically arranged central name index contains over 50 million reference cards for over 17.5 million people and is the key to the documents and correspondence files. This section was not open to the public until 1996. For more than 60 years, only the families were allowed to obtain information from the files, to the anger of historians. It was previously reasoned that after the Second World War, the Jewish population of Europe had dropped to 3.5 million. But according to the new figures past the conservative 6 million known victims of the Holocaust, there might still be up to 8 million unaccounted for. The 6 million number, viz., Franken, was a journalistic pointer used in newspapers even before World War I to denote the victimized Jews of Tsarist Russia. The protocol amends the 1955 Bonn agreements that consigned some 47 million documents to Bad Erlsen. They contain minute, and sometimes macabre, details the Nazi regime recorded about its victims. Agreement inked to open huge archive of Nazi files, AFP, July 27, 2006. The 11 countries governing the ITS agreed to lift the ban on research that had been imposed to safeguard 17.5 million victims' privacy, though it still would take some time until each country ratified the decision and the doors open. Anne Frank is one of the most discussed Jewish victims of the Holocaust. Her wartime diary, The Diary of a Young Girl, has been the basis for several plays and films. Born in the city of Frankfurt in Weimar, Germany, she lived most of her life in or near Amsterdam, in the Netherlands. Born a German national, Frank lost her citizenship in 1941. She gained international fame posthumously after her diary was published. It documents her experiences hiding during the German occupation of the Netherlands in World War II. Wikipedia.org. Sophie Scholl was a German student and revolutionary, active within the White Rose nonviolent resistance group in Nazi Germany. She was convicted of high treason after having been found distributing anti-war leaflets at the University of Munich with her brother Hans. As a result, they were both executed by guillotine. Since the 1970s, Scholl has been celebrated as one of the great German heroes who actively opposed the Third Reich during the Second World War. Wikipedia.org. Eva Moses Kor was a survivor of the Holocaust who, with her twin sister Miriam, was subjected to human twin experimentation under Dr. Joseph Mengele at Auschwitz. Both of her parents and two older sisters were killed at the camp. Once in the camp, the twins were housed together in barracks, girls 1 to 13, boys 1 to 13. 3 days a week, the children were taken to a lab in Birkenau where blood was drawn and they received injections of many unknown germs. One twin was the guinea pig, the other the control. If one twin died, the control twin was killed with an injection into the heart and comparative autopsies were done. 3 days a week they were marched to Auschwitz I, placed in a large room, and forced to stand or sit naked for 6 to 8 hours. Every part of their bodies was measured, compared to charts and each other. Kor founded Candles, Children of Auschwitz Nazi Deadly Lab Experiments Survivors, in 1984. Kor founded Candles Holocaust Museum and Education Center in 1995 to educate the public about eugenics. Candles Holocaust Museum and Education Center is the only organization in the world dedicated to the memory of the twin victims and survivors of medical experimentation at Auschwitz. Still Hilfe, or Silent Aid, an organization that provided help for Third Reich fugitives of justice, was the real Odessa, the organization of former SS members, the Daily Mirror reported in 2010. According to the report, Gudrun Berwitz, the daughter of SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler, head of the Gestapo and the entire Nazi police force, was a leading member of the organization, which began operating in 1946. Still Hilfe is known for helping Nazi fugitives Klaus Barbie and Erich Priebke evade justice as well as facilitating the escape of Adolf Eichmann and Joseph Mengele to South America. The group is rumored to have some 25 active members, including Himmler's daughter, but receives support and funding from hundreds of other sympathizers. Himmler's daughter, member of Nazi Fugitive Aid Group, The Jerusalem Post, December 2, 2010. In 2017, propaganda boss Joseph Goebbels' secretary, Brunhild Pomsel, died aged 106. Walt Disney publicly visited South America as a goodwill ambassador just before the tricky steps of Odessa. Various fugitive German space scientists were hiding nearby. Disney would later introduce some of them as luminaries to America's youth. Annie Jacobson's Operation Paperclip, 2014, showed how governmental secrecy and its narrow-minded ethics obscured the scale of Nazi crimes perpetrated by hundreds of technologists who were put on the U.S. payroll. We've long known, after all, that a Nazi player such as Wernher von Braun, so central to the sky-screaming V-1 and V-2 rockets, those Nazi wonder weapons, or Wunderwaffe, that Hitler launched against Great Britain and Northern Europe, was an indispensable factor in America's space program. Indeed, he was the rock star of NASA's early days, celebrated by Walt Disney, and much honored. Matt Damsker, Paperclip, How the USA Made a Deal for Nazi Scientists, USA Today, February 19, 2014. In 1938, a month after the corrupt Kristallnacht anti-Jewish pogrom, Walt Disney welcomed Nazi filmmaker and propagandist Leni Riefenstahl to his Hollywood studios. The Hollywood Tribune noted, How Leni Riefenstahl became Hitler's girlfriend. Education for Death, The Making of the Nazi is an animated propaganda short film produced by Walt Disney and released on January 15, 1943. The film features the story of Hans, a boy born and raised in Nazi Germany, who is bred to become a merciless soldier. A voice track of Adolf Hitler in full demagogic rant is used in a torchlight rally scene. In the end, Hans and the rest of the German soldiers march off to war only to fade into rows of identical graves. Disney depicted cradle-to-grave Nazism as being virtually too big to fail.